Welcome to the Pongcast, keeping you in the loop for all things table tennis.
That is unbelievable.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Pongcast. This is the World Table Tennis Championships wrap-up part two. So, in case you haven't caught it, last week, that was part one, where we discussed the World Table Tennis Championships. We reached up to the fifth round, and it was such a long episode, it said it split up into two parts. So, this part, well, we'll be talking about the championships from the fifth round all the way to the finals, and have a discussion about table tennis looking forward after the World Championships, and if anything, it changes. So we'll do that. And again, when I said we, it's me and Jackson Maine from PrimetimePingPong.com, and he has his own great podcast over there, so please check that out. But before we resume where we left off, let's go to the news. So this week in the news, if you remember, Bo Urschel Dusseldorf, they were in the European Champions League final against Orenburg, and their first leg in Dusseldorf, Bo Urschel Dusseldorf won 3-0, and this time they played in Orenburg, the second leg of the match, and I'm not sure how it will work out. Orenburg would have to win at least 3-0 to even it up on aggregate. And then I'm not sure how the tiebreaker works, but in this case, we didn't have to worry about that. Dusseldorf only needed one win, and they did that. They did get that thanks to Timo Boll's win, 3-1 over Dmitry Otrov. So, Bo Urschel Dusseldorf, again, the European Champions League champion. We also had the European Table Tennis Union Cup Finals, and this featured French championship team, Levalloy, which features Chong Chi Yuan from Taiwan, Emmanuel Levison from France, and Igor Rubstov from Russia. And they faced off against Chartres. And this team includes Damien Eloy, also from France, Gao Ning, probably the top player on that team from Singapore, and Par Gurel from Sweden. And in this case, Levalloy had already previously beaten Chartres 3-1 at Chartres' home court. So this seems like the perfect situation for Levalloy to take the title. We're playing at Levalloy's home court. And Chartres would need to win at minimum 3-1. And considering they already lost 3-1 on their own home court, you know, how would they be able to pull it off? Chartres would need to win 3-0 to win outright. And what are the odds? Well, they actually did pull it off. Par Gurel beat Chuang 3-2. Gao Ning took down Emmanuel Levison 3-1. And finally, Damien Eloy beat Igor Rubstov 3-0. So, Chartres, again, seemingly impossible odds, or heavy underdog, and they pulled it off. So, they are the European Table Tennis Union Cup winners. And in the U.S., the 2011 Eastern Open took place in Rutgers University in New Jersey. The finals open winner was Xun Zhang. He's the 23-year-old coach, a recent addition to the Maryland Table Tennis Center, I believe straight from China. And he won the open finals over Yan Junggao. So I don't know if Xun Zhang has a rating yet, but Yan Junggao is rated at 25.97. So pretty impressive win, and I guess it's maybe a sign of things to come from this new player and coach. And this final bit of news might be more appropriate for the E-Channel, but Kong Lingwei, very famous, top former Chinese player, and also current Chinese coach. He was actually arrested in Beijing for an altercation. Details are kind of sketchy. It seemed he needed to use a restroom and a building. Security refused service, and then there was that altercation, and he was intoxicated, and arrested. So, and I guess he's already been released. So, I guess just goes to show celebrities, even in table tennis, can get in a bit of trouble once in a while. I happen to come across this bit of news from tabletennista.com. So check that website out. It's got a lot of good news for up-to-date stuff on table tennis around the world. And I'll make a link to it in the notes on the website at thepongcast.com. Also, go back to the older episodes and put in some relevant links to things I mentioned so you can check those things out for yourself. So don't forget to check out the website at thepongcast.com. And I'll update those older shows with those links. So that's it for the news, and now we will wrap up the World Table Tennis Championships wrap-up. Yeah, well, that's a good point. That brings us to the fifth round. So, like you mentioned, T-Mobile, Chen-Chi, did you get to see that match by any chance?
Yeah, I saw the first three sets, and then I fell asleep.
Okay.
Like midnight.
Yeah.
I woke up, it was the women's singles final, so I had to go through and find out if Timo actually won or not.
Just a little off track for a second. The timing of the matches, you try to watch them live. Around what time did they take place for you? We're 14 hours apart, so it's hard for me to figure out off the top of my head what time you had.
Yeah, well, I guess the good matches would have been kind of early to mid morning for you, I suppose, and they were.
Yeah, that's right. They were very early morning, especially the finals, the semis, and the finals were like I think it was like 6 a.m. and then 9 a.m. and the run before that was actually like I don't know, like 4 a.m. or something like that. So. Yeah. I tried my best to wake up early and catch it, but I fell asleep. I'm like, forget it. I'll just watch the replay.
Yeah, I was fortunate. You know, the semis were on a pretty good time, 6:30 at night and 7:15, I think.
Oh. Okay, perfect.
With the semis, and then I didn't stay up to watch the final. I might have stayed up if Timo had made it, but that was on at like 11, I think, 11 p.m. Yeah, so yeah, pretty good timing in Australia, I think.
Okay.
Sounds like you had a tougher time over there.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, that's a credit to ITTF that they archive all these matches and we can watch them online again. So the only thing I was a little scared of is, you know, you don't want to know who wins, but if you're kind of scrolling through the videos, they already show who, you know, men's finals, this person versus that person, and I'm trying to, like, cover up the screen with my hand while I'm scrolling through. I'm like, please don't.
Close your eyes, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying really hard not to look at same time I'm trying to find the match, so I'm playing that game with myself. So Timo played Chen-Chi, and then I guess some might say it's fortunate that Chen-Chi, the first Chinese player he meets, is the lowest seeded, but I mean, Chen-Chi is an awesome player in his own right. And then the other match is Wang Hao beat Jun Mizutani 4-0. Ma Long beat Ma Lin 4-1. Did you get to catch that? I heard Ma Long, I don't know, Ma Long was a little teary-eyed after that match.
Oh, was he? No, I didn't see that. Yeah. I think I watched a little bit of that match. But yeah, I didn't see that. No, go on.
Yeah, I like I said, I didn't get to catch that one. I might have caught maybe a little bit of it. Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with that. I read that he was a little teary-eyed. Maybe he felt that was a big stepping stone maybe for him or another process as being one of the best players in China, beating Ma Lin. Or maybe because maybe he knew Ma Lin, that was Ma Lin's last chance and he had to be the one to end it for him.
Was there an interview with him after the match? Maybe we should go back and watch that.
Yeah, there might have been. Did you watch some of the interviews by any chance?
I watched a couple, yeah. It was kind of difficult because, you know, you would listen to the English interviewer ask the question, then you'd have to wait like, you know, a couple of minutes for the translation and then for it to come back out via the translator. So that was a bit annoying about the interviews. But yeah, I watched a couple of them still, but not that particular one that we're talking about, I suppose.
Yeah, me neither. I thought that was another great thing ITTF did, doing these little post-game interviews. I didn't find any of them really, you know, super insightful, but it was a nice touch that they did those interviews.
Yeah. I don't think we sort of see those too often in other tournaments. So, you know, World Championships, they pulled out the stops and, you know, gave it a go anyway. Even if they didn't get, you know, the, like you said, the most insightful answers out of them, then actually one thing that made me laugh about the interviews was one of the Japanese players, I think it was Kasumi, one of the Japanese women.
Mm-hmm.
The interviewer asked the question, and then there was kind of a bit of confusion about who the microphone should go to next, and the microphone got handed to her next, and she obviously doesn't speak any English. She just seen the look on her face. She was like absolutely terrified. She was quite funny, I thought.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a nice thing, at least, that we can kind of see them off the table, even just for a few minutes. And honestly, some of these players, I have no idea what they even sound like. So I was a little surprised, like the voice, you know, sometimes I expect a serious voice, and some of them were a little like normal talkers or soft talkers.
I did like that as well. And that's a good thing about having commentary in the matches as well, is that you get to hear the names actually pronounced.
Yeah.
You don't get a lot of audio sort of things going around in table tennis, so you know you don't sort of know exactly how a name is pronounced.
Yeah. And finally, the final match in that round was Zhang Jike playing Wang Lichen, and that went 4-2. Unfortunately, Wang Lichen lost. I did predict, my early prediction was Zhang Jike would win it all, but I was rooting for Wang Lichen, and he lost there 4-2. And like I said, although I did predict Zhang Jike was my pick, I felt Wang Hao and Ma Long were strongest coming into the tournament. I expected one of those two, realistically, if I had to bet money, those two would win. So when Wang Lichen lost to Zhang Jike, I felt like, oh, well, at first I had hoped Wang Lichen still had it, so to speak, that he was still as strong as, you know, as he could be. When he lost to Zhang Jike, I thought, okay, maybe it is a sign that he's getting older. But that was a good match. I don't know if you happened to catch that one.
Yeah, I can't remember if I watched that one now either. Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely watched the match against Xu Xin, but not the one that Le Quinn actually lost. So.
And so at this point, like I said, let me look at it real quick. I mean, it's basically all Chinese players in this round. I mean, how do you think this affects the sport, getting this late in the rounds where it's all Chinese? They're so dominant. They're great players, very entertaining to watch. But overall for the sport, you know, it feels a little disappointing at the same time that there's not more varied competition.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the Chinese, I think they realize that as well. Like they cheer for, you know, foreign players and want to see them do well. So yeah, I think that's definitely the way that some of them feel. And I guess is it good for table tennis, you know, long term? You know, probably not, because you know other countries want to see their players do well. And And a player from another country doing well might be, you know, a good reason to spark popularity of the sport in that country. But, you know, you can't take anything away from China.
Right. Well, yeah, I totally agree that, you know, if the less strong or popular players that you put out, it affects the popularity in your own country if you don't have any strong representatives. And especially when you see Chinese so dominant, it seems there's less and less other players who can come close to them. So yeah, I guess we'll see how. And like you said, you can't really take anything away from Chinese. Well deserved. Obviously, they're probably the most professional. The system they have, it's unparalleled. So nothing to take away from them. Of course, can't penalize them at all. Wouldn't want to.
Well, they, you know, it sort of is happening a little bit. You probably know the news that there's only going to be two representatives from each country at the Olympics this time around. So that means someone not from China will win a medal, for sure. So that's kind of a short term, you know, stopgap solution to the problem, but long term is we just got to have, you know, better training and better players in our respective countries, you know, to sort of.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I totally agree. And a good point. Yeah, I forgot about that. The Olympics only sending two players, so it'll be interesting to see who China sends. Yeah, I guess we'll see what happens then. Maybe at that time we can do another episode together, doing an Olympic kind of theme episode.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So now we're getting to the semifinals. Wang Hao played Ma Long, and that went 4-2. I felt that was kind of, like I said, I felt Wang Hao and Ma Long were probably the two best, technically seemed like the strongest players at the moment, and they had to play each other in the semis, so I kind of felt fortunate in the sense that I wanted to see, at this moment, I wanted to see John Jiko or Timo Boll win the championship. So, and when I saw Wang Hao beat Ma Long, it was 4-2. It was a good match, but I was, after I saw that match, I was surprised. No, not surprised. I was just very impressed by how dominant Wang Hao was. I mean, he just looked so good, keeping up with Ma Long and beating him on rallies and, you know, when they're exchanging forehand loops or whatever. I was just very impressed.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think probably the backhand to backhand rallies was where Wang Hao won that game, in my opinion, and probably in the commentator's opinion as well. I think they said that he's got the best reverse pinhold backhand in the world, and it's hard to dispute that, seeing the power coming out of it. So
that's a great point. With that reverse backhand, they can generate spin with a wrist motion that gives you that extra wrist motion. Yeah, it's an excellent point.
I mean, everyone has a great forehand, but you know the backhand is kind of so the backhand is what wins games sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of interesting that we talk about that because Zhang Jiko was very impressive with his own backhand. I think throughout the tournament, and he played Timo Boll, and that went 4-1. And yeah. I'm sure you saw this one.
I definitely did. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what was your take on that match?
Yeah, well, again, something that I noticed and probably was pretty obvious was that the longer the rally went on, the more likely it was that Zhang Jike would win that point. Like, and a lot of the times I noticed it ended with him hitting a forehand topspin into Timo's backhand corner, and Timo turning to play a forehand and kind of getting squashed and sticking it. Sticking it long or in the net or something like that. A lot of points ended that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in the first set, Timo kept the points short, and that's what won him that set. But yeah, the longer it went on, the longer rallies and the more Zhang Yike was able to get on top there.
Yeah, and it's kind of that battle when you have right-handers versus left-handers, and somebody's going to be hitting a forehand to somebody's backhand pretty routinely. And like you said, Zhang Jiko kind of got the upper hand in that case. And also what you mentioned, Timo was doing well the short game, but it seemed as it progressed, Zhang Jiko kind of figured that out. He was more comfortable, and he himself was doing, I think he had strong serves that gave Boll trouble and really set himself up pretty well to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, and to me, I don't know, but it kind of... I don't want to say Timo seemed nervous because I'm sure, like, you know, at the top level, you've got, you know, sports psychologists and stuff like that kind of helping you out with that sort of thing. But yeah, that's just kind of how it seemed to me. Like he was, you know, missing shots that, you know, you would expect him to sort of get on and stuff like that. I don't really know how else to explain it.
Right. No, I agree. And especially as it went on, you can kind of feel just the momentum, I guess. Zhang Jiko was rolling with it. But there, I saw one quote mentioned on from TableTennisTA.com where Zhang mentioned that Timo Boll is the reason for Liu Guoliang's sleepless nights. So I thought that was kind of funny. Liu Guoliang, of course, being China's head coach.
I read that article. I read that one too. That was, yeah, good article.
Yeah. I guess that shows a lot of respect towards Timo Boll. It's a lot of credit to Timo Boll that China's so focused on him and he's such a big threat to them. and what a fantastic player he is. But unfortunately, he didn't get to pull this one out. So, and one more thing was John Jucco was pretty animated. You could tell he was he had like a chest pounding after the win, and he'd be even more animated in the next round, in the finals. So that's John Jucco playing Wong Hao.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I found this a very entertaining match. A lot of interesting points. I mean, I was particularly surprised. John Jucco, a lot of points controlling the backhand and winning those backhand to backhands, which I guess you've brought up plenty of times throughout this tournament. Backhand to backhands. You know, I think as people are amazed and by the flash, and of course love to hit forehands. Seem that's a strong suit for most players. But really, a lot of points are won on the backhands.
Yeah, I agree with that. And backhand to backhand relays seem to be getting longer and longer. Nowadays, it just seems to be a trend in modern table tennis. Like, to tell you a story, my coach goes to Japan quite a lot, and you know probably once or twice a year, and he comes back with different training drills and stuff like that. And this most recent trip, before it, we would almost never train to play backhands from the center of the table. Mm-hmm. And he's come back from this trip to Japan, and now we are training kind of backhand footwork, playing one from the backhand corner and one from the center.
Really?
It just seems to be the way that things are kind of going. The backhand is becoming more prevalent because the game's getting faster and you have less time to step around, I suppose.
Yeah, great point. Yeah, and you also notice a lot of people like to take their receive the serve with their backhand, and they'll even step all the way to the forehand side and do their little backhand flick to return the serve all the way that comes all the way to their forehand, which seems to be a big trend as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. The Shikita, I think it's called, like the side spin, top spin flick that they do with their backhand, seems to be a pretty popular way of receiving serve. More and more.
Yeah, I guess especially for shakehanders, you can get more wrist action. You know, you can bring your wrist back a lot more with your backhand than your forehand. So that works out well. And I have to admit, actually a few months ago, I was actually so impressed with Sean Jiku's backhand flip over the table. That's what I try to work on for the past few months. So I've been developing it. It's, you know, I'm not at his level yet. That'll take quite a long time, but it's a very effective shot. I've got to say, I love, you know, even if I don't make it, it's just such a fun shot to make, because you can get, you know, crazy side spin, and it's very effective. I found it very effective. People have trouble returning it because of the side spin in particular.
Yeah, I agree with that. I didn't actually watch the final. I tried to watch it this morning, but it kept cutting out at a specific point, so I assume that's something to do with the video file itself.
Oh, really?
But I'll be trying to watch it. Trying a few more times today and maybe tomorrow on that.
Okay, that'd be a shame if the final match is kind of corrupted.
I don't know. I tried it a few times and it seemed to cut out at exactly the same point, like three or four different times. You know, that I refreshed the page and tried again. Like it was like just, you know, I suppose maybe a minute or so before the match was about to start. So don't know what's going on there, but So do you have any more comments on that match?
One of the most memorable moments, I think, John Jucco was up actually in the sixth game. He was up 10-5. This is the final game. Spoiler alert.
This whole show is a spoiler, I think.
Yeah, should have mentioned that at the start. Just don't listen to it. Okay, thanks. That wouldn't go well for us. He was actually up 10-5, and you think, okay, that's it, right? And Wong Hao was battling back, and it went to deuce, and I can't remember the final deuce, but I'm going to guess it at least went maybe like 14-12 or something. Very impressive.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, I remember that now. Like, yeah, I mean, that's the only part of the match that I've seen, just the last the last few points, because I saw highlights on YouTube. I think you're right. I actually thought it was 13-11, but
You could be right. Yeah. So very impressive comeback there. It seemed like John Jucco, I don't know, he kind of like took his foot off the pedal maybe, and Wong Hao was also probably trying to fight stronger. So John Jucco, six games. Now here's the interesting thing. I mean, Wong Hao comes all the way back, and Zhang Jiku does pull it out, but I can't help but wonder what would happen if Wong Hao managed to pull that one out. If you know you're up 10-5 and you lose that game, you go to seventh game, you could have put it away for a world championship. Wong Hao might have had incredible momentum, might have really frazzled Zhang Jiku for the seventh game. We did not see that happen, but I can't help to think what would have happened.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, well, you would have been really upset with yourself for dropping it from 10-5 up, but yeah, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah, I guess, and I'm just kind of curious at the pro level how that works. I mean, their mentality must be on a totally different level, and just how do they deal with situations like that? I mean, I've dealt with situations like that, and I've wanted to break my racket. I don't even want to finish the game. I'm ready to break my racket. So I can't imagine dealing with that or how they deal with it.
I mean, you know, psychology is a massive part of the game. So I would assume that they'd be, you know, working with psychologists and stuff like that to sort of so that they don't, don't choke. I suppose. I don't. A bit off topic, but I'm reading Bounce by Matthew Syed at the moment, and you know if I can read that kind of information in a book that cost me $15,
mm-hmm.
surely you know them as professional table tennis players can get quite a lot more advanced knowledge and training mentally, being at the top of world table tennis.
Yeah,
but I guess you can never say what's going on in their head and you know.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's much preparation or advice to get from psychologists. Who knows at that moment how that works out. But especially at this highest level, how they deal with it. And finally, Zhang Jiku wins it. He's really emotional. Not even after the win, but leading up to in the final points. I mean, he's really screaming loudly. And he rips his shirt off. Pretty funny moment, but I felt, I guess some people were a little critical, thought it was a little, too out of line to scream and rip a shirt off, which I can see, but I felt maybe it brought some more personality to the sport, and you could really feel like his emotion at that time, how he was feeling, that amazing thrill. I can't imagine being world champion.
Yeah, that's right. Personally, I thought that was a bit extreme. Like, as soon as he won the game, he fell on the floor, kind of in relief. I thought, and that I can identify with that. Like, you're so relieved after you've won a tough match.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the feeling that you would feel. But after that, to get up and then rip your shirt off is a bit. I couldn't identify with that at all. Really, I can't imagine myself ripping my shirt off after a win.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I buy my own shirts.
Okay, so yeah, that was so overall, Zhang Jiku wins it. And so, what was your take on the World Championships overall? I guess there weren't many upsets, and as expected, Chinese domination near the end. Timo Boll made it to semifinals, which was the furthest he ever made it, and. I guess someone made a pretty astute comment that Timo Boll, every world championship, he makes it to the next level that he achieved prior. So maybe next time he'll make it to the finals. But overall, I mean, besides all that, I found it very entertaining. Quite a few entertaining matches, and glad to see I could actually watch it live and also watch it archived on ittf.com. How did you find the world championships overall?
Yeah, I was definitely impressed with the coverage and the photos that I saw. Like, the web coverage was really really good, and I guess from a wider table tennis standpoint, it depends on what goes on to television now. Like, for people who weren't specifically seeking out table tennis on the internet while the world championships were on. But yeah, I was definitely very, very impressed with the coverage and yeah, the in general what I heard from the tournament.
Yeah,
just going back to Timo for a second, like,
sure,
he is getting older, but I'm sure you've heard he's going to play the Super League next year, so I'm sure he's going to pick up some tips there. And,
yeah.
And, you never really know.
Right.
I don't want to say die to Timo.
Yeah. I mean, well, first of all, like to your other point that this is great for the sport that we can all watch it, but at the same time, you know, most of the audience is already table tennis players who are already the audience that, you know, it's already there. So I agree as far as getting it more popular. If there's some way to get other people outside the sport to watch it. I have no idea how. I guess it's the magic question, the million-dollar question. So hopefully, you know, maybe getting the stuff on TV is the next level. Hopefully more adventurous sports channels will do that. As you mentioned, Timo Boll, playing the Super League. So you think he has, I mean, he's getting older. Is he, what, 31 now? I'm just guessing. 30?
Is he younger? I think he's just turned 30, yeah.
30, okay. So, yeah, I mean, we've got this new group of Chinese players, that the changing of the guard, so to speak, with the young guys coming in. And Timo Boll, you know, he's a great player. I mean, what, he's seeded second? I mean, he's ranked number two in the world. So not to take anything away from him, but what do you think are the odds? Can you think he can win a championship, world championship, coming up? And maybe the next one or the one afterwards? Time is kind of, you know, he has to be thinking that his time is coming up eventually.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, my heart says he still can win, but my head says that, yeah, time is definitely running out, even with the Super League experience that he's going to get. Yeah. I mean, something that, you know, I was talking to my stepdad, who really doesn't follow table tennis that well, and he was kind of asking the ages of the people that won the tournament, and he sort of made the comment that it's a young man's game, and it really is at the top level. Like, you know, there's lots of, you know, I made the point that there's lots of, you know, 40 year old guys sort of in the top, you know, probably 40 or so.
But
at the very top level, it is you know, still quite a young man's sport, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess once we get into the top 20 and especially top 10, I guess, but. You know, Samsonov is still there. I'm not sure. He's not that old, but he's getting up there. So, Timo, his time is maybe, you know, he might have a good chance, maybe the next two tournaments, world championships, excuse me. What are your thoughts? Ma Lin, Wang Li Chin, who also a lot of people speculate he might retire, even though they aren't that old either, because of the young guys coming up. You think those guys have a chance? I mean, realistically, I think that's probably it. Unfortunately for Ma Lin, who was a great player. And Wang Lichin's won quite a few. I'd like to see him win another one. Why not? But I think this might be it for them, too.
Yeah, well, I think I read that Wang Lichin is not retiring straight away. So we'll have to see there. How old is Wang Lichin, do you know?
I think he's maybe 31 or 32 now. Somewhere around there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so that's what I've heard. So he's not ready to retire. He's you know, and he said that his tournament was normal.
Yeah.
read into that what you can. I mean, I suppose you know, like what he said actually translated into English, it comes out as normal, but you know, not really sure what he actually said, but.
Right.
But, you know, like, I don't think he's disappointed with his performance or, you know, overjoyed. He's kind of, yeah, I'm not really sure, but I've just heard that he's not retiring straight away, so.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he can't win them all, and he did beat Zhu Xin, which is one of the young guys, and he lost to John Chico, but, I mean, he's the one who won the world championship. He won the title, so if he had to lose, be knocked out of the tournament, he lost to the eventual winner, so. I guess that can't be totally disappointed with that. Interestingly, Werner Schlager, when he did win the world championship, he was 31. So, you know, there's hope for all these guys, isn't there?
Yeah, I agree with that. And Schlager is probably still one of my favorite players as well. So, yeah, it's hard to say. You know, sure. if they keep their training up, their fitness, then yeah. You know, anything can happen, and maybe they can be mentally stronger as they have experience. So
that's true. Very true.
Yeah.
I guess kind of curious looking at the, I guess, aftermath of the World Championships. I mean, overall, I guess we've already kind of discussed it already, but China, it's already, you can see that the changing of the guard there with the younger players. But the rest of the world, especially the European players, are their closest competitors. But we're still kind of running on T-Mobile, Samsonov, Schlager. It seems like there's not a lot of younger European guys coming up. Maybe Ocharov, who, he's an entertaining player to watch. But it doesn't seem like a really, really strong European players that can really contend. What do you see on the horizon for Europeans, and if can they close the gap with the Chinese anytime soon?
Yeah, well, it's going to be hard, I think, to close the gap. I think people were making a big deal out of Thiago Apolonia. I think he's from Portugal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's another young guy that's, you know, people seem to be pinning their hopes on in the future.
Yeah.
For Europe. But yeah, like, you know, China's, you know, they're the best at training at the moment, and I can't really see them slowing down. The only thing is that they might, like they have with the British Olympic hopefuls, they've invited them over to China to train and to learn. So if they do a little bit more of that, then you know, maybe the skill level will, you know, increase in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
But at the moment, China all the way still.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've got another 2 years till the next World Championship, so who knows what can happen until then. Hopefully we'll see more players pop up and get a rise up in the ranks. One of my, like I mentioned quite a few times, Adrian Matenay did really well, and I think he's ranked near the top 20 in the coming close, I think, at 30s, 20s. So, you know, maybe he's one of them too. Yeah. So, okay, good. Good to look forward to there. And I guess, I don't know if you have any thoughts. Of course, World Championships every 2 years. So that means next year will be the World Team Championships far in advance. Also, we have the Olympics coming up, right?
So, yeah, that's right.
A lot of stuff to look forward to. I hopefully we can collaborate more on those kind of special episodes. Any other closing thoughts?
No, not particularly. I mean, yeah, we're looking forward to the world's teams and definitely the Olympics. It'll be good to see how the English players fare with home ground advantage. You know, I think there's a lot of pressure being put on their young guys, Darius Knight and them. So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Very true. Yeah.
And that's pretty much it from me.
Hey, if you don't mind, Jackson, I wrap up my interviews with what I call the third ball attack. So that's where I ask three quick quick fire questions. So I think people like to hear what your thoughts are as well. So if you don't mind,
okay.
So first of all, what equipment do you use? What's your blade, your rubber?
Recently I upgraded to Nataku violin is my blade, and on the forehand side I've got Yasaka Pride. It's a tensor, and on the backhand side I've got Nataku Nadice. It's a fairly spinny kind of rubber that was recommended to me by my coach's son, who's quite highly ranked in Australia.
Okay.
So before that, I had it's kind of a funny story. I had a kind of a beginner's butterfly blade with the same rubbers on it, and I was using it for multi ball. And my coach said, "Show me that bat for a second." He kind of tapped it against his head, like it's hard to describe through just audio without actually showing you. But he tapped the handle of it against his head. Apparently that's how he checks if a blade is split. And he said, this has got a massive split in it. So
really?
That was the demise of my first real blade that I'd had probably mid to late 2008 when I first started playing seriously. Before that, I had just one that I bought from the local sports store, which is obviously not good enough. The first time I brought that to a training session, they just shook their head at me and laughed.
Yeah, yeah, we've all been there. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I think so.
Yeah. Oh, it's a funny story about the tapping the handle or the blade against the head. Yeah, I've never even heard about that.
Hilarious. First time I saw it. Yeah. And then it turns out there's a few of them that do it, you know, as well. So it's just you kind of hold the blade head between, like, with both hands, and kind of with the blade handle pointing towards your head, and just tap it against your head, and you can just, I suppose, if you had a split blade and a normal blade, and you did it with them both, you could probably feel the difference,
I guess. Okay, well, yeah. I don't think I'm gonna try that experiment out though. I'll leave it to them. So, so what's your favorite table tennis related moment?
Good question. Yeah, I guess I've not really been watching that much ITTF coverage of late.
But maybe like a personal table tennis related moment, playing a tournament, or you had a great match or something like that.
Yeah, well, recently I've been promoted to the next division at my club, so that was a pretty high point. I had a really good season last season, so just I guess as part of a long term achievement, I'm happy to be improving. You know, sometimes it gets difficult, you know, doing so much training a week and wondering if you're getting any better. But yeah, it's been a good season overall for me. The last season that I've played, so in Division 3 now, and hoping to move up within the next couple of seasons.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's about as exciting as it gets.
No, personally. I mean, you should be very, very proud of that. Practice paying off. Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah,
it's good. I mean, it's always satisfying when you can, especially to move up a level. So, great. And finally, maybe you can recommend a song or artist you like to listen to. Maybe you don't listen to them, but maybe you can recommend a song or artist that people can listen to get pumped up for a tournament or a match or something like that.
Yeah. The other day I was listening to "It's My Life" by Bon Jovi. I thought that was pretty good before I played.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that question. Actually, I've heard you asked a couple of others that question. I was actually one. You must listen to quite a bit of music yourself.
Quite a bit. Yeah. I'm a little music geek. So I listen to a wide variety of music. So I'm just kind of always curious, like what people's opinions on music, or just what they like to listen to. I guess you can get a tiny bit of insight on their personality, I guess. Just nice to hear some aspect of the personality outside of table tennis.
I definitely agree with that. Yeah. That's a good way to finish up an interview, you know, with that sort of thing.
Yeah. And that's actually I don't know if people realize, but that's the music I used to play into the interview, whatever their recommendation is. I use that music to play into the interview, and I play out of the interview. I use that recommendation. So you will be hearing that song in just a few seconds.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
So Jackson, thanks so much for joining me, co-hosting the show. It was a lot of fun. And I can't wait to do this again.
Yeah, me either. It's going to be great. I think I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay, Jackson, well, good luck with your table tennis training. I see you've already got results, and more luck with that in the future, as well as your coaching and the podcast, of course.
Thank you. Same to you. I hope we both do very well in the table tennis podcasting world, and also in our own playing careers.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thanks, Jackson.
Thank you. It's my life, and it's now or never.
So that wraps up the World Table Tennis Championships, and that wraps up the show. And if you haven't been able to keep up on the World Table Tennis Championships, hopefully you're all caught up now. Thanks again to Jackson for joining me. He's got his own podcast at primetimepingpong.com. And I'm betting we'll probably do some more collaborations in the future, so looking forward to that. And finally, if you want to keep up with the podcast and be alerted whenever a new episode comes out, you can subscribe to the show through email, RSS, iTunes, and there's a link near the top of the page at thepodcast.com where you can do all that. Of course, I'd like to hear your feedback, so if you have any comments, questions, show ideas, people you'd like to hear me interview, maybe an event to promote, please email me at thepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow the show on Twitter at thepodcast. There's a Facebook page for The Podcast, and if you happen to stop by there, you can like it. And if I get enough of those, I can grab the Facebook URL, if maybe some of you know what I'm talking about. And if you happen to get this episode through iTunes, please leave a review, and you can rate it there. And finally, tell your friends, tell your clubmates, and I'll see you next time. Bye.